people come to the table to negotiate, whether it's your customers, you're negotiating the price, whether it's your supplier, whether it's your creditor, whether it's a bank you owe $5 million, everybody's pushing their way. This is what I want. The main component, the 100% success rate for my negotiation is it's always a win-win.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky. I'm the host. I have to say that without you as my wonderful audience and the amazing guests that I have on the show, this show wouldn't be as popular as it is today. So I just wanted to say thank you so very much to everybody who's making this wonderful show what it is today. And with that in my mind, I'm on the line with Regina Galbanas. How are you, Regina?
I am very well and really excited to be on with you, Rick.
I was practicing your surname. I always try to get them right. Now, Regina is a specialist who helps small businesses improve how they run their business. She makes sure that they survive and thrive. And we're going to be deep diving into a number of different topics that are, I think, quite important for startups and existing small businesses that maybe want to scale up a little bit. But before we do that, Regina, would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself with the My Future Business audience?
Absolutely. So I've been a life and business strategist for the past 17 years, and my focus has been on helping failing companies reorganize and get back on their feet. So now what I've done is I've taken almost 2 decades worth of information and all these case studies and all these companies. Now I've worked with around 100 companies, each generating annually anywhere from $2 million to $20 million. So I've done a lot of research in the last 17 years. And now I have taken my passion of being of service and helping people and companies thrive and survive. And I'm working more with new CEOs, new entrepreneurs, and teaching them how to avoid financial chaos, how to avoid catastrophic failure, and how to grow their companies correctly to actually avoid all this chaos and pain that I've seen so many times over the years with my customers going through corporate restructuring.
And that's the part of the mission of the My Future Business Show, is to help people get past that horrible failure rate. You know, it's 9 out of 10, depending on who you ask, it's the majority that will fail. And I suspect that some of the things we're going to be talking about today, Regina, will help people counter those things. So I think a really good place to start is to understand what is fundamental to somebody who's just coming into this space. They're a new CEO, they're a startup. What are some of the things that you share with them?
The biggest two things that I share with them is actually the main two reasons why companies fail. And exactly like I saw on your website, Rick, it says the failure for businesses unexceptionally, unacceptably high and largely avoidable. Mm-hmm. So the two points are why people fail. And this is so important for new business owners to pay attention to, because the point is to teach them to avoid the mistakes that will bring them to chaos at some point financially, is lack of information. Now, what I mean by that is if you have a company that continues to grow, and any company that's here, it's either dying or it's growing, company, I don't care if you have one employee or 101 employees, there is something happening with your company. You're either moving forwards or backwards. And lack of information on the CEO part, because at some point, if your company is growing, even a little bit, the company's needs will outgrow the information that the CEO possesses. It's a fact, and it never, ever, ever fails. So at some point, you have to know that you have to be smart enough to know that you're not smart enough to know everything.
Yes.
And you have to accept that fact. And all of the clients I've worked with, they missed that sweet spot when they thought they could do it all themselves and know it all themselves. And that's when things kind of start falling apart piece by piece. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a failing company with a lot of debt. So I teach new CEOs, it's okay to say, I don't know something. It's okay to reach out and ask for help. It is much better to do that than having to struggle your way through growing a company and usually failing at it, because you can't do everything yourself. And number two, what I tell people is kind of goes along with asking for help. You have to have the correct infrastructure in place. CEOs fail one after another is because they do not have an infrastructure. Now, what do I mean exactly by that? Mm-hmm. Is they sometimes will find people that maybe cost a little bit less per hour versus the correct people because they're cash tight, their cash flow really doesn't allow them to bring the right people on staff. But I teach people day in and day out, you have to have, you got to surround yourself and your company with people that support your vision and your mission. They have to embrace your idea and your business and your whatever it is you're trying to do, accomplish, and achieve within your company. They have to embrace it as their own. They have to care about it that much. So it's so important to have the accurate people in their correct positions. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just have a lot of people that are not really yielding the results that are supposed to, that correct support system is supposed to provide for you. So the two main things is with the new business owners, I do tell them, know when it's okay to ask for help, when it's time to ask for help. And number two, have the right people in your organization because that will make or break the company.
Yeah, this is one of those topics where we could literally talk about dozens of different elements, isn't it? It's so multifaceted that it's very difficult to try and compress everything into this one call for everybody who's listening today. But what we're going to do is focus on the 80-20 rule, the 20% of the things that you would do in your business that give you 80% of the results. What would they be, Regina?
That would be being a perfect leader in your organization. Because there is really no, the only way you would have a high turnover in your company is because of poor leadership.
Yeah.
If you really, really dedicate your time, your resources in properly training your management and your people, and then your management can train your people, if you can invest as much as you have of yourself into that, the results are exponential. And this is where people are really not understanding. You've got to invest in your infrastructure. And for whatever reason, people just don't want to put the money into that. Mm. I don't understand why they usually start paying attention when things start to kind of fall apart. But if you can invest as much as you can to get the best yield out of it, you, number one, invest in your infrastructure and into your people, into leading them and teaching them correctly. And number two, you invested into the relationships you have with your customers because money is just a byproduct of the relationships you build along the way because money is very organic and the money is in the relationship. So if you invest a lot of time and effort into your customers, you will never be without of work. You will never be without work on the floor, whether it's product or service. You're always going to be in business. You're always going to grow and you're always going to make money.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this. I'd love to talk a little bit about, mindset and perfectionistic nature of entrepreneurs, especially the one-person bands. How difficult is it to influence a new CEO to let go of the reins and trust that other people could do the job better than them possibly?
It is extremely difficult. Because, and here's what I've learned after working with so many companies, because I work directly with the CEO and then my job is to teach them how to be a CEO, how to run a company. And then it kind of, goes to their management, their employees, so on and so forth. And people, a lot of CEOs don't feel that their employees can handle their dream. So it is important for us, for example, for me, when I come and work with a company, I make it very known to them that their business and their vision, I embrace it as my own. Mm-hmm. Because what people don't understand is for somebody to let go. So when you have a CEO, an entrepreneur that's opened the business, they didn't just wake up this morning and decide to open a business today.
Yeah.
They spend their life preparing for it, hoping and praying and saving their money and doing so many things that got them to a point to open. So when they tell you, here, help me with my business, or when they tell their employees, here, do the job, it's like them saying, hold my baby for me. And yes. A lot of people miss on that. They're like saying, hold my child. This is this is their passion. You know, it's taken some people years to actually get up and have the guts, because it's a scary process and most people are afraid to open their own business because it is a scary and it's a lonely journey. So I have to teach my people, my customers, for example, senior mm-hmm. entrepreneurs, that I care about your dream. I embrace it. I take it on as if it's my own, and I will cuddle it and I will love it and protect it. They need to know that they can trust you with their mission. The reason they won't let go, they don't trust anybody cares enough about this baby they're telling you to hold, so to speak,
yes.
as much as they care. And they hold on and they hold on and they hold on until there is nothing left, because they try to be the salesperson, the bookkeeper, the CPA, the legal team, the HR, and nothing happens because you can't be all those things. Plus, you don't know, you do not know all those functions as a CEO. It's not possible for you to know how to navigate every department. So they end up spinning their tail and things fail, which is very disappointing. But the main point is, when people see that you care about their dream, they will trust you and they will let you help.
And this comes really back to the core of the leadership component, doesn't it, really? And then the onboarding process, once you get them past that idea of trust, and they do inherently trust you, every time they see you, they say, Regina, you know, this is what's happening now, I'm ready for the next step. When they're looking through the selection phases, they're bringing on somebody new, do you help them understand the types of questions that they should be asking potential employees? Or contractors, for that matter?
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes I'll tell you honestly, for me, and this is what I tell my customers, for me personally, integrity, honesty, loyalty, those components come first.
Yep.
So I always teach them to make sure that's in place, because at the end of the day, if one of those is missing, I don't care how good somebody is, I would not trust them with my customer's dream. I would not trust them with my customer's company, because I never see anything as a company. I understand what it takes for somebody to say, I'm going to be a business owner. I get it. Their heart and soul is in it. So it's not just a company somebody's interviewing for. So I am so careful when I advise them, make sure you have the right people. Make sure they're passionate. See if they're going to care about what you're doing. And obviously, are they qualified to do the job? Because you want to have, I'd rather have less people, but qualified people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's some sage advice for everybody who's listening today. I'd love to start talking a little bit about cash flow and the importance of managing cash flow, because we're obviously short on time with an interview process, and I'd love to, you know, knock over that 20% that's really going to give them some impact. What are the things to be aware of and manage with regard to cash flow?
Great question, Rick. So a couple of things. Number one, what people don't do, they're afraid to do, is you have to know when it's time to fire your customers. Yes, I'm talking about firing your customers. There are clients that don't pay you for months on end. Even if they pay you a lot of money months on end and you're in production, for example,
mm-hmm.
I've had so many people, for example, in construction industry, big commercial buildings, they're telling me the client is going to pay me 6 months from now. Cash is king. For 6 months, if they're not paying you, it means you're responsible to fund the labor, to fund the production, to fund insurances, to fund material, because your suppliers may not be willing to wait 6 months. So there are customers who may be good down the line, but they may not be in business later down the line. So if somebody's not paying you according to the needs of your company,
mm-hmm.
you have to let them go. Now, there's also customers that do pay, but they just drain the life out of you and your company, and they're never happy. They're always complaining. They may be a good payer, but there's always constant issues, because then they go out into the world and you're the bad guy, even if you're the good guy. So they kind of smear the reputation. I've seen those customers as well. So you got to choose. It's okay for the CEO to choose who they want to work with. And most CEOs, they just want to get the work in. They don't really care who they're taking in, because it's all cash. They think it's cash flow,
yes.
but it can really negatively impact just the flow of the company at the bottom line. And it will impact a lot of the times morale of the company. The other thing is, people will pre-fund the anticipated growth. They will borrow from the future. What do I mean by that? an example, let's say a manufacturing facility, and they come to me and they say, I need a piece of equipment that's $500,000. Mm-hmm. And we're going to buy it now. So I have seen people go out, take a loan or take an expensive loan because they're not very bankable. They got to go to hard money lender. They buy the piece of equipment. They grow the company or anticipate the growth of the company before they have the cash flow to justify and support the expense. So it is so critical to the company and for the CEOs to understand you can't grow the company without going into debt. A lot of people will pre-fund the growth. They will first accumulate the liability, hoping and praying the sales will be there when the payment for this equipment or whatever it is due. And a lot of the times I'll tell the customers, go to your clients, see if anybody wants this extra product, see if you need this extra piece of equipment, get the POs in, get the prepayments, yeah. Pre-fund the liability before you take the liability with having no cash flow, hoping and praying that you're going to have sales to justify it down the line. Because all you've done, you've taken on the liability with zero assets against it. So people will get in debt to fund their growth. And you can grow without getting into debt. I've done it a million times. Mm-hmm. You don't have to get in debt to grow your company. The process may be a little bit slower, but it's definitely safer.
Yes, absolutely. This is, you know, if we come back to the first box, it's the startup and then it's the small business just getting going. They're scrambling. They're doing what they can to get funds going in the door because they recognize that cash is king. But you're effectively taking them on that learning curve, aren't you?
Absolutely. I'm taking them on the learning curve. And the way I work with my CEOs is that the company is secondary. So people hire me and say, help me grow the company. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, the bottom line of any company is simply the collections of the decisions the CEO had made along the way, right? The bottom line just reflects the decisions made along the way. That's really all it is because somebody's calling the shots.
Yep.
And that flows into the financial, in the balance sheet, the P&L, that flows into your financial statements. The decisions of the driver in the driver's seat of the company in that chair is impacting the bottom line. So as we're growing the company, really, I am teaching the CEO to make correct decisions. And I don't talk to my customers. I see a lot of mentors do this one call a week or, you know, two calls a week, an hour each, like on a Tuesday at a specific time. I don't work like that. My customers can call me Sunday afternoon if they have a question because they're having a bad time. They can't navigate through a problem. So I take them through the process. There are specific steps, obviously, but it's a constant adjustment, too small, you know, 2-degree adjustment every single day along the way, yep. Because you want to teach the person in charge, how do I make correct decisions? And then if I make the wrong decision, we talk about how will it impact? So you got to teach people as well. It's not just telling them what to do. My job is to teach them. So when I leave, they know what to do.
Yeah, I love this conversation because what I'm taking from it is that you are invested in a real relationship with your clients, your customers, call them what you will. But you're not only focused on getting them outcomes, you're focused on the quality of those outcomes. It's just a wonderful process you're taking them through. I'd love to, Regina, talk about negotiations, be it with clients, be it with suppliers and so forth. What do you share with your clients about negotiation?
You know, one of my favorite subjects because for whatever reason, God has given me the ability to negotiate well because I understand people and I've negotiated lawsuits for clients. I'm not an attorney, but I've negotiated between all of the attorneys to where everybody's happy and walks away. I've negotiated creditors, I've negotiated, you name it, I've talked through it. And there is one component, and this is what people miss, and this never, ever, ever fails. And if somebody can prove me wrong, I'm all ears. And this is, Rick, and you'll probably, I'm hoping you'll agree with that as well. And when people come to the table to negotiate, whether it's your customers, you're negotiating the price, whether it's your supplier, whether it's your creditor, whether it's a bank you owe $5 million, or whether it's anything.
Yeah.
Everybody's pushing their way. This is what I want. The main component, the 100% success rate for my negotiation is it's always a win-win. When I come to the table to negotiate, I don't care what it is.
Yep.
I always ask the other side, what do you want? when I start with what do you want instead of what do I want, mm-hmm. need what my terms are, they tell me. And I can always line up and find middle ground, because as long as people understand you're there to find a win-win solution for both parties, mm-hmm. they're no longer defensive, they're no longer aggressive, they're no longer feeling like they're being taken advantage of. You have to always walk away where it's a win-win. And people will always, always, always negotiate with you if they feel the sincerity for the win-win. Because when I negotiate with people, they can sense just by my presentation, the questions I ask them, and the statements I make to them while we're conversing,
of course.
That I am genuinely looking for a solution that benefits them. And when I go down the list of how this benefits them versus just benefiting me, and a lot of times it'll benefit more for them than for me or my client, but mm-hmm. it's a win-win ultimately.
Yes.
They can't really get too upset about anything I'm saying, because I'm for them and I'm for my client. So mm-hmm. everybody walks away happy.
Yeah, there's that level of authenticity there, you know, and I can just sense it, like you were saying. And you can often, and I think this is a takeaway for the audience, is to, I guess, read body language and really listen into what they're saying to you when they're offering a contract or saying, this is what I want. You know, a lot of people would find that quite difficult, wouldn't they, to, you know, turn it from what do I want to what do you want as well.
Absolutely, because the key is, because people think usually short term. Mm-hmm. This is what I want right now. And a lot of it is, I want to feel like I won. People are looking for a win.
Yes.
To get that signature, to get their way. It's not about short term win. It's about a long term relationship. Look, there is a reason that the companies that actually stay in business long term, if you look at their, you know, their accounts payable or their customer list, they usually have relationships that are long-term. The money is in the relationship. That's a fact.
Yes.
Because
yes.
money is very organic. Money is a byproduct of everything you do right. Money is just a byproduct. And people that understand it, they always have long-term friendships, long-term business, professional relationships, and good, healthy, quality companies and great quality individuals working for them.
Yeah, you don't often hear a very successful person, you know, quote unquote successful person, talking about how much money they're making. They're never about that, are they? They're always about the vision, and they're always about what they can do for others. And this is some of the information that I think is falling into that 20%. It's just a wonderful call so far. Thank you very much, Regina. I want to talk about pricing, and you know, because I know for a fact that it's difficult to increase prices from fear that you will lose customer base. What would you say to that?
Well, increasing pricing is a second component. If you have, exactly like I said right now, if mm-hmm. you understand that money is organic, if yep. you have done your due diligence and have taken care of your customers the best way possible in the organic way, you don't have to worry about customers leaving if you increase your prices reasonably. Because what people don't get is that people will pay for that relationship. People will pay you money for your product or service
yep.
if you deliver on time, if you take care of the relationship, if you're respectful to it, if you're responsible to it, if you do what you say with that relationship. So people will pay extra money for that peace of mind you as the service or product provider provide to them. So when you raise your prices, the relationship is so solid and so good, it is not gonna matter to them, because you provide the value. And the people that leave are the people that don't wanna pay you anyways.
Yeah, and not necessarily, and you don't necessarily wanna work with them anyway, would you?
Absolutely, so you end up making more with less customers.
That's a win-win, doing less for more. Everybody wants a bit of that, don't they?
Right, and that cuts your labor, that cuts your overhead, you know, that cuts a lot of stuff as well, because you're able to do more for less. But when you can do more for less, it gives you more time, more resources to invest more into your current customers to make sure that they stay with you 20 years from now.
Yeah, it seems to be pointing towards relationship marketing being the core of your marketing for your business. What would you say about marketing? And is relationship marketing a big part of the approach that you take?
It's the biggest part. And I'll tell you why. We live in such a cold environment with this digital marketing.
Oh, yes.
We all know we get mass emails. So when I get an email from somebody, I'm just a number on their list. We all get automated messenger on Facebook. So now we all know it's all automated. So maybe 30 more people got it. Nothing is personal anymore. Nothing is authentic. It's very cold. It's very fast. It's very digital. And I got to tell you, Rick, I've had some of my customers, and they thought I was nuts, write handwritten notes to their customers saying, thank you for your business, for absolutely nothing. Thank you for your business. I love doing work with you. I look forward to another, whatever, 10 years, you know, whatever. Here is some chocolate, whatever it may be.
Yep.
Those customers would receive the letter, write a hand note back, take the time to do that, send it back and saying, thank you. I cannot remember last time I got a handwritten letter. So the personal touch, the voice on the phone, makes a whole difference. I always teach my clients, because the money is in the relationship, know when their birthdays are, know when certain dates are, send them something. It matters. And the reason it matters more and more is because people do it less and less. And everybody's getting on a bandwagon of mass marketing. Yes, do it. It works, do it. But also the things that nobody is doing, the personal touch, it matters. And people, like I said, people will pay for the relationship. Look, at the core of it, we all want to know that we matter. We all want to know that we're loved. We all want to know that we're heard, right? At the end of the day, we're all wired the same, pretty much. We have the basic needs.
Yeah.
And because of technology, we've gotten so far away from these touch points that address the basic needs. Basics work. I tell customers all the time, the basic principles of a relationship work. Just because people got away from it, it doesn't mean you have to. You keep doing it. So I incorporate both, because relationship is the key to your success.
And this obviously flows into your customer retention.
Absolutely. And your customers will be the best walking business card for you.
Yep. Yeah.
It will be an absolute, you know, I was talking to somebody on social media, on Facebook, actually, and somebody had a question. I said, sure, because I help a lot of people. They ask me, I don't even charge them. I love being of service. You know, mm-hmm. I'm never worried about money. Money comes. I'm not worried about that.
Yep.
So I give and give and give all this information. And somebody posted a question. I said, you're welcome to, you know, ask me the question or send me a personal message through Facebook Messenger if you don't want to disclose your information. And somebody posted on that, you should really listen to Regina. The advice she will give you is invaluable. Rick, I have no idea who that woman is who posted that. But they know me. It's a group of 220,000 business women. I guess I'm known as somebody who helps and doesn't ask for anything. But it made my heart smile, because it's the relationship. It's the retention. Yes, it's in the relationship. Same thing.
It's that referral. It's that, you know, word of mouth, isn't it? You've created yourself, you know, I guess a persona of sorts that has positioned you in the marketplace as somebody who can be trusted, all these things that we've spoken about. Now, Regina, I'd just love to know where people might be able to find you if they want to work with you and learn more about what you do.
Absolutely. A lot of people actually get to me through Facebook. So just my name, you guys can obviously find me through there and send me a message. And my personal website, just my first and last name, it's reginagulbinas.com. And you guys can reach me through the website, submit your questions or request a strategy call. I do not charge for strategy calls. I think it's important to, like I said, to be of service to people mm-hmm. without asking for something in return. So you know, to whom much is given, much is required. So I do my best to give back as much as I can.
Well, there you go, everybody who's been on the call with us today. I will do as I normally do, is I will make the links back to Regina available below the post that you will see, regardless of where you see it. It will be pointing back to Regina. Regina, it's really been quite a treat spending some time with you on the My Future Business Show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.